woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Ellis, just met over on the board. SP Futures up 34, Dow Futures up 350, NASDAQ Futures up 79. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Happy Wednesday. Doing all right.
Before we take the guy out in cuffs, I do hope they have a vaccine, this Moderna. Now, yet again, they have a vaccine, and the stock's up and the market's way up. What is this like? I'm going to say it's at least the third time, isn't it?
Yeah, at some point it gets, you have to start wondering, I guess, do we really react like crazy every time there's this little tidbits of news? Here, come Charlie Brown, kick the football. Now, it doesn't mean they're necessarily pulling it away. It just means that every little bit of news is just this huge reaction. And it's almost like I'm just trying to think of an analogy off the top of my head, but we've probably all known that person that just doesn't handle stress very well and flies off the handle at the slightest little glitch in life. Well, I guess that would be a Karen, wouldn't it?
But
that's sort of what the market's doing. Is every little bit of information, it's like, hey, let's get crazy.
Well, it's
good and bad. You know, it doesn't matter.
Well, I think if you follow any of my thoughts over like a real long period of time, like maybe 30 years, that the whole fabric of the market has been destroyed little by little, to where there's never any standing orders anywhere. And of course we insist on being open 24 hours for most of the players, even though people will tell you how liquid it is in the middle of the night and all that stuff. Where most of the players really are asleep someplace. If you have a market at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. and all of a sudden, if you just came out with the information, you'd get your move. Okay, because there are some stops and some things that drive people the wrong way, but there's some stuff going on. But if you let people use the term front run it, and all of a sudden you and I are, for whatever reason, are making markets in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden every buyer in the world comes flying by, and all of a sudden you're short, right? And all of a sudden then the news comes out, and then maybe the Fed's buying, and maybe God knows what else is happening. All of a sudden now you are a huge buyer because you are now trying to scramble back and get what somebody just took from you. So it becomes very cascading, and nowhere along the line is an order of a Kevin O'Neill who just wants to sell an appreciable number, this number he just wants to sell, he doesn't care. So if the first guy gets in and jams the second, the guy who's there up to be short or long because he has the information first, you can double the problem, at least, is what I'm saying. So it wouldn't be a surprise to me that after the first, onslaught of news where somebody gets it first, that now you have somebody who's chasing it. So not only does the first guy pay up, but the second guy has to pay up as well, the guy he originally bought it from. So when you have markets that are sparse anyway, and with very few players, and then you can drop a news on it. That's why I used to see the Fed in the 2008 era, in the Obama era, you know, I'm not blaming this all on Trump, whenever they made an announcement, they would do it like in the middle of the night, where the British had a real bad day and the S&Ps are down, you know, 30 points or something, and all of a sudden one of the Fed guys gives some BS something in China. And but the object is, when they're doing these messages for a purpose, front running is supposed to be illegal. But when you have God on your side, like they think they do, the more you front run, the less you have to do to get the same reaction, right? So they almost want a front run. Even though if you ask them that, they would be appalled that they would ever call it that. It's being effective. You know, one man was.
So if you were going to scope out Tom's road back, you know, it's not something you're ever going to be able to snap your fingers and do. But if you were able to say, okay, 10 years from now, here's what it really needs to be like, or 5 years from now, here's how it needs to be. You know, what kinds of changes would you be implementing? What would you be doing to push it back?
First of all, you get the Fed out of this whole mess where we're going to save the world and so forth. I mean, the Fed, I'm saying this out of memory because it's been so long, but the Fed used to do their open market operations, I believe, on Monday morning and Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock, where everybody knew that the Fed was going to call somebody and either they're draining a little out of the system or putting some in, and you didn't really know until they did it what they were going to do that particular day, because it is very difficult to maintain the reserves, the monetary reserves, at a target rate. When you say, just, well, back up a little bit, when the Fed, well, traditionally, if the Fed said we're going to maintain a federal funds rate of, say, 3%, well, that's not all that easy to do. So because people can create money and shrink money, the money supply, on their own, just by going to a bank and borrowing, or the bank or depositing money and then the bank making a borrowing. That there's ins and outs of the monetary system going on all the time by individual people. In other words, an example is, you know, if Matty Weber all of a sudden has $1 million in cash somewhere, right? Well, the cash is counted, all right, as cash, because we know that's out there. But he takes it to the bank. Everybody arrests him these days, but in those days, they didn't. And all of a sudden, now the bank, again, now they have zero reserve requirement, but they used to be able to lend out 80%. So if Kevin O'Neill goes and gets a $800,000 loan from said bank, and he puts it in his checking account, you know, what's the money supply now? Well, it's now $1.8 million, because you have 800, and Matty's still got his million, right? So then when you put yours back in, somebody could go borrow 640, and that's the way it went. That's why the reserve requirement was such an important number. So that's happening all the time.
And of course, all that's dependent on what I actually spend versus what I put in the bank,
right?
As maybe working capital.
Well, no,
so,
not exactly.
And that's another complicator, and that's why I'm bringing it up.
Well, not really.
Yeah, and that's part of what they have to figure out when they try to manage.
Well, but if you take the 800 and immediately buy a machine for 600, well, the guy you bought it from is going to put it in his bank. So now that bank can lend out based on that money.
Right, but he's going to pay his suppliers too.
I'm saying, but
the parts. So all of that, it's not a straight 80%. If that's your reason,
right.
But it's a big number.
Yeah.
And you know, so I'm just throwing that out there. I don't mean to sidetrack you from important point.
But the Fed traditionally would say, okay, we're running a little hot this week. Our federal funds rate, which is the rate at which banks would borrow from each other overnight, because if they didn't have enough reserves, they would borrow from one to the other. Because if all of a sudden you did take your $800,000 out and give it to another bank, well, chances are the bank you took it from might be a little short on reserves that night, and the one you just put it in might be a little long on reserves. So they would borrow back and forth from each other. In that market, the rate at which that number went back and forth is what the Fed would monitor. That's what's known as the federal funds rate. So if they were trying to maintain it at 3%, and all of a sudden that rate started creeping to 3.1, 3.2, they'd say, guess what, the system's a little tight. And on Monday morning, they would add some funds to the system, and they didn't have to add very many, because of the multiplication I just went through. Well, you don't have to add a whole lot. It's not like you had to add, like, you know, $1 trillion like they do now. I mean, it's,
right, and in fact, the art of it is that you wouldn't want to add too much or too little, but you don't want to overdo it too.
It was very, very much of a fine tuning operation, but still something had to be maintained
because otherwise you you create more variants than you want to see. So what you have to do is is you're doing everything in smaller doses and trying to do this gently is probably the best way I can describe.
Well, but I'll contrast that with today's world, where instead of on a Monday morning they enter the T-bill market, the T-note market, and everybody knows right where they are. And it's really hard to manipulate the T-bill market, because at one point it was like the most deep and liquid market like in the world. So whether the Fed came in and did, $20 million in the T-bill market that's doing, 90 bazillion a day, really didn't, it was like one farmer bringing an extra bushel into it. I mean, it made a lot of difference because of the multiplier effects to the little bit of adjustment the Fed wanted to make, but it didn't make any difference to the rate of any kind. Well, the Fed funds rate, yeah, a little bit, because you drew some out of the system, but it really didn't affect anything else, like your mortgage rates or anything, unless they did it to big time. So now, contrast that with, I think, on somebody's advice, whoever the hell it might be, BlackRock or somebody inside, I'm going to go buy bonds in Ford. Well, hell. And then I'm going to do it like whenever I damn well feel like it, maybe a Thursday afternoon. Now, that's so far afield of what I just described, it's like we're on the planet Mars, Kevin. I mean, they're doing anything at any time, and they don't care who knows about it. Internally, it doesn't appear. They're about to buy ETFs. They're going to buy stock. Well, the one company that they gave a loan to, they ended up with 30% of the stock. Well, now they're what? They're in the stock business? They're in the mortgage business? I mean, does anybody want that? I don't.
No, absolutely not.
But they don't seem to. They had the Dallas Fed.
And who was it? Was it Jeff yesterday that said, yeah, and you just wait until they actually do start directly buying into the market?
I'm not so sure they have it. I'm not so sure they have it. Or if it isn't direct, their actions so affect the market that it causes whoever knows about it an instant later to buy the futures. If it's not them, it's very close to them. What's the difference? Call Goldman Sachs and say, I'm adding this, I'm buying somebody's bonds. Reed, I'm putting $400 billion into the system like in the next hour. You think Goldman's not going to go buy the futures? Still getting bought. The first person who knows about it, but, it's like 9/11. How many people, when they saw the planes hit the thing and they evacuated their buildings, the one thing they did before they left was sell spoos? I mean, it's sad, but it's true.
Well, yeah, and, it's the same phenomenon as something in the stairwell of a building that says in case of fire, exit via stairwell, and then tweet about it. It's always that. What am I going to stop and pause and do before I do what I need to do?
Well, have you ever heard of this guy?
And this is you're right. It's so very financially driven.
I think you need.
Insider information driven.
Well, and the idea that there's three or four market makers in the world, and they pay millions and millions of dollars to these firms so that they get a first look at all the order flow. Kevin, the entire system is based on kickback and front-running information. That's not any system I would design.
Not a market anymore.
No. And yet, the other day, I had a bunch of clients on the phone yesterday, but I was kind of listening half-assed to CNBC, and they gave this big report about this Robinhood, this real discount broker. And I'll bet that some of these firms have given Robinhood $100 million this year in payment for order flow. And, let me see if you can look this up. Just put, Google Robinhood, Tesla stock. I think they were having something like 10,000 new accounts per hour were buying Tesla the other day when it was up, however many $100, buying one share, two shares, three shares, whatever people can afford. It is scary. I mean, the
how many of those do you suppose were same person with 100 accounts?
No, nobody. I'm not that many. Why would you do that?
Why would you do that to sort of blur your activities?
Yeah, but I mean, why don't you buy 100 shares if you got the dough? I think this is a new gambling of a huge extent.
Well, you saw, you followed the whole David Portnoy from Barstool Sports thing, right?
Yeah.
he's leading this whole charge of young people that have that typically bet on sports and can't because there is no sports, and he has a couple million followers, and he's getting them all in the market as retail traders during the day, and whatever he tells them to buy, they're buying. And I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't been on Twitter over the last month, but I wouldn't be surprised if that is a big influence on these types of things.
There used to be a guy who did that with options. I forget the guy's name. I'll think of it at some point during the show. A little gray matter is going aged here, but what the hell is the guy's name? Because I met him like 10 times. He'd be a big talker at all these big money shows and everything. And he was one of these guys that he would tell you that he would be your, you know, you just listen to him and you'd make a boatload in the market. But of course, he was awful at it. I mean, it's really hard to just come up with 10 trades a day and have them right. I mean, it's real difficult. I mean, it's not like I could do it. You know, nobody can. That's the point. But other people, if you're in the business like I am, you can't say, gee, my last 10 trades, you know, made 20% a day, and if you take that out for a year, no, you can't do that. Nor would you want to. But if this guy, he was sued by somebody, and he said he's not an investment advisor, he's not anything, he's just, you know, you could pay him big time. But what you would do, Kevin, he'd have a weekly newsletter, all right? So that was like, you know, whatever, 300 a year or something. Well, that's not good enough because you really wanted to tip when the tip was hot. You'd want to, like, this stuff faxed to you in the morning or something. This is before email. Or even before that, they would, like, call you. Every one of these things was a nudge up. And then Dr. J had the DPM. I didn't see too much from the OEX because the OEX was so big. But John, it was like the invasion of the ants. Everybody's coming in to buy a one and two lot if he said, you know, buy the, you know, the 10 calls in Ford or something. So all of a sudden your entire machine would light up with like 500 people buying like one and two calls. I mean, it's sort of the same thing as this Robinhood is not, I mean, it's not necessarily new with the guy you're talking about, man. I mean, all this stuff's kind of been done before, you know, to a certain extent. But you can never do it with stocks because, I mean, if you started, the story was, well, if you did a non-round lot, 100 shares is a round lot, right? So if you wanted to buy 50 shares, which people did, I mean, I did for my nephews and niece when they were born, and I wanted to get them started those dividend reinvestment programs. So, you know, you could buy 10 shares of Disney or 10 shares of AT&T or whatever. But you had to pay more commission, and you paid up an eighth because the guy who was the round lot trader got an eighth more because it would take 10 trades for him to be able to do 100 lot and get out of it. So you would pay an extra eighth, and you would pay more commish. Well, as time was going by, and these people don't split their stocks, I mean, why should a stock be $1,000, for God's sake? If you want every man to own it, how can you? You know, 100 grand for a round lot? That's a little rich. So, but now they found ways where people are doing it one and two, and nobody cares because it's enough money, that if you did it free, somebody front runs it and steals, you know, whatever, a couple of pennies every time or maybe more than that on something that high, and everybody's happy. Or they are until it craps out. But the game never changes. It just keeps going round and round, right? I mean, it's, you know,
same game, different variations.
What do they say in the, what was the story, the song? It's still the same old story, Tales of Love and Glory. I mean, right? But it never changes. I mean, you read Greek tragedy, was it, you know, 1,000 years BC or 500, you're like, it's like you're watching a TV show today, right? I mean, people don't change.
Yeah, storylines are the same.
Hey, the reason why I couldn't remember this guy's name I was talking about, because he got a horrendous name to try.
It's because you're old.
Well, here, how's this a name? Would you ever remember the name of a guy, Tillman Fertitta?
That would actually, once I got that one out of the mouth, it'd be a hard one to forget.
He's the guy I've been talking about on CNBC. It was like he was listening to the show yesterday. He had him on, and he's bitching a blue streak about his restaurants in L.A. and how the governor, just like a week after he told everybody he could open everything up, is now shutting everything back down again. And he goes, God, it sounded just like us yesterday. He goes, you know, when I see these guys making these calls, sitting there getting their paychecks, not having any idea what it takes to run a business and hiring people back for 2 weeks and firing them again, getting your inventory up, doing all that stuff, cleaning your place, and all of a sudden you can't open. Guys, they have no idea. We've got to find a way to cut these people's paychecks that are making these decisions. And I'm sitting there going, wow. Sounds like he was listening to us yesterday. I mean, something's wrong here, Kevin. Something's seriously wrong. And the idea of the teachers union being involved of when they go back to work, but they're going to get paid no matter what.
Based on policy issues, either not related or only marginally related to education.
Right. Right. I mean, and for me, the answer always is, because, you know, on the one hand, I'm probably a diehard liberal, and that if people are in trouble, you know, I don't have a problem trying to help out. But I also know...
We need to help out.
Pardon me?
We need to help out.
Yeah, but on the other hand...
For me, it's not even more than having a problem. You have to have a helping hand. You want to get people back on their feet. There is no value to anyone if we don't.
Well, that's right. I mean,
it doesn't necessarily have to be indefinite unless you have someone who is incapacitated. But I think that's where we start to differ. But anyway, go ahead.
But also every one of these plans has an unintended consequence. So every one of them should be reviewed at least yearly or semi-yearly, and because some have unintended consequences that end up being worse than not having help in the first place. But the point being is that the idea of this union stuff for municipalities, I mean, it's not the same arm's length transaction as a private union. I mean, everybody knew that. Even Roosevelt, one of our more liberal presidents, knew that. So it's something you have to deal with. Now, this particular thing with this virus, okay, despite everybody's bitching every day about, oh man, look at the new cases. Every time there's 50,000 new cases, in 2 weeks there's going to be 50,000 people, minus one or two that maybe have a problem, that all of a sudden now are good to go. Back to work, back to teach, back to school, wherever they're going. I mean, that seems to be lost, totally lost on our political establishment. So you can't tell me that you can't start the Chicago schools, since nobody seems to know how these young kids are affected or if they are. You can't tell me you can't start with 10 schools on September 1st and for the first month just monitor everybody every day with teachers that have already had it and sit there and see what happens. And the kids all get it. They all have a fever after a week or two. I hope not. What if they never get it? Then you monitor and you look at their families. Do the families already have it, not already have it? I mean, the only way you're going to know, Kevin, is to do something and keep your eyes open. This idea, oh man, I don't think we should.
You know, you would be accused of experimenting with the children.
You know what, Kevin? You're going to be accused no matter what.
I know.
You're going to be accused of everything. I mean, there's going to be, what did Richard J. Daley say? Let me see the alligator or something along those lines.
People are making allegations, and who are these alligators?
Yeah, yes, in today's world, you could give everybody $100 and there'd be somebody who's bitching, you could have afforded 105. I mean, that's just the world we live in. So somebody has to have, but that hasn't changed either. I was reading this article about, the guy asked Maddie to Google and he was dead for 13 years. Maddie was giving me a bunch of crap that morning, which of course was well deserved. He was the guy to put together the original Jerry Ford swine flu vaccine. He goes, well, not put it together. He wasn't a chemist, but he goes, you do know, of course, when you do something like this, that you're going to give this fly swine flu shot to some guy who's 65, and he's going to walk out, and the next morning he's going to have a heart attack, and it's going to be your fault. And yet people have heart attacks every day. Before when you're in any kind of position where, let's just say, you're mature enough to understand how every decision and there's never a clean decision. It's not like if you could wave a wand up in a cloud like if you were God and say, I'm going to cure cancer for everybody. I guess there'd be not very many people that would bitch about that. Maybe some people who make chemotherapy drugs would bitch. Somebody's still going to bitch, Kevin. I mean, even if you did something like that where you'd say, how could there be something wrong with curing everybody's cancer? Somebody would have a problem with it, right? At least privately. But, I mean, you can't think that way. You have to just do what you think is best. And otherwise, we're all frozen, which we're getting to be, I think.
So you're looking for more leadership.
Yes,
I'm not even necessarily saying that has to be top down. I mean, throughout,
right?
Throughout all of the layers, we have politicians, not leaders. We have some politicians who are leaders, but we have mostly politicians who are not leaders.
Well, but look at what you have.
Or I don't even know if mostly is a fair statement. We have too many people who have a lot of influence who are not leaders. They're politicians.
But why would anybody?
The only mission is getting reelected or getting elected to the next level of office.
Well, I mean, why do you think there are people that are, I mean, at Pullman? Okay, there used to be guys that were out welding, that were like retired lieutenants and captains in the Army. Right, and they happened to be welders, okay? Now, and the guy who ran the place, you would think he probably knew more numbers than the guy who was the captain, you would think, than the welder, but it doesn't mean that in times of stress that you might want to take that welder and put him up in a big office and say, hey, people are attacking the place, maybe you be our leader, not this other. The skill set that it takes to be a politician and win an election. Why does anybody think, even though that's sort of what most people think they're electing, why does anybody think that makes them a leader of any sort? Right? The best leader might be the guy who is running the button manufacturer. It might be the guy who's running Nike. It might be something else. I mean,
Kevin, save that for after break. The person carrying a title that's leader.
Right. S&P futures up 41.50. NASDAQ futures up 85. You're right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice.
PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Mel over the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures up 41 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 73. Dow futures up 452. So we got a rollicking rally here today after the big turnaround down on Monday night. We were up and down yesterday, finished up, and now we are continuing that today pretty dramatically. DAX up 228, 1.8%. FTSE up 108, 1.6%. CAC up 114, 2.2%. A lot of this because the Moderna has come out with this. Of course, they say you will need a booster. By the way, it's just so you know, it is, even though the word vaccine is going to be all over the news today, it's not a vaccine. It's a shot that develops antibodies, which is essentially a flu shot, and you will need a booster like pretty quick. So, as of now, and there, again, it still needs more testing. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 358, Shanghai down 53. That's 1.5%, which is interesting. Hang Seng up, Hang Seng is like unchanged. So Nikkei's way up, the Shanghai's way down, and Hang Seng's unchanged. So that's kind of a mix. Bonds, 10-year 6.65, right where it's been. The Bund minus 0.43, and Japan positive 0.02. We've got oil up also, 55 cents back up over 40. $40.84, so a brief dip under 40. It's right back up there, almost 41 now. Brent up 46 cents, 43.36. Natural gas, 175. RBOB, 127. Gold down 530, but still over 1800, 1808. Silver, 1974. Wow, it's looking towards 20 here. Copper, 292, unchanged. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start here on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower looking good, too. We're day two of the ramp restrictions on the inbound Stevenson as you approach the Dan Ryan. It's down to one lane with construction until mid-September, and it's causing significant delays. It did yesterday, and it is so far this morning, as folks are getting used to these new lane restrictions. So I would avoid coming in down on the Stevenson if you can, because that's our slow spot this morning. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions. Off the expressways, we have a crash at 143rd and Harlem. On the south side, but everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds early. Could see some sunshine later on. Could also have some showers move in the area. We'll reach a high of 86. Right now it's overcast and 76 degrees downtown. Still dry, but rain in the area. For our Phoenix listeners, no rain down there. Sunshine and hot, a high of 111. Right now it's clear and 89. On this day in sports history, Chief, July 15th, going back 17 years to 2003, on this date, the 74th All-Star Game was played in Chicago.
What are those All-Star Games?
I know. Down on the south side at then called U.S. Cellular Field. Of course, now it's Guaranteed Rate Ballpark. The American League beat the National League 7-6 on this date in 2003. Chief.
I was there the night before at the home run derby thing.
How was that? I've never been to one of those.
It was nice. We left early, but talk about a show of everybody who was everybody. We got there nice and early, and Larry had terrific seats for like the eighth row, right? And everybody's wandering around. I mean, I immediately was outraged that we didn't have a field pass because anybody was on the field. You know, and we had the eighth row. So your would be girlfriend at the time, what was the soccer player's name? Ginny Finch or whatever.
Softball player.
Softball player.
She was a softball player.
We're talking about a good-looking lady. She's out there. She was going to be an announcer, and I don't know what happened. If she decided to have a family instead or whatever, I don't know. But she's a nice lady. But she was given. I'd been doing the show for a while, so I started to recognize the difference between, you know, just doing things unscripted and thinking as you go and having people on versus what people do, you know, generally when they start out and have their interviews. That's why they ask the Fed so many stupid questions. I mean, they don't listen to the question before or one before that. They just have theirs. Well, she's interviewing people about their first all-star experience, right? So she, of course, hunts down Peyton Manning, who's wandering around as one of the young Peyton Manning. And so she says to him, so what do you think of your first, like, all-star experience? And Peyton Manning goes, well, it's not really my all-star experience. I just got a field pass, and I'm hanging around out here talking to you. She goes, no, seriously, what do you think of your first... she was bothering a term to ask him about his first all-star experience, and he goes, I don't play baseball, I'm a football player, I'm just a hang around. She refused to take that as an answer. I was dying laughing. But anyway, he was young, she was young, I was young, it was a fun night. But the Home Run Derby took forever back then. It was the old format. So we probably left at 10 o'clock, it was still going on. I don't even remember who won. But it was fun. I mean, but watching those guys in batting practice, they're just all clipping them and everything's just flying out of the place. But that park's pretty easy to get out of them anyway, but no, it was a good time, but I mean, it had to be, I'm going to say there were 800 people on the field wandering around. You know, it was the place to be. There's no doubt about that. So next time, Maddie, you get his field tickets. Just saying.
That'd be pretty pricey, I imagine.
You don't think Peyton paid for them?
No.
Just saying.
Yeah, you got to go, I'm Matt Bleepin' Weber. Give me some tickets.
Yeah. This is Stacks and Jacks, by the way. I need 10 of them.
That'll work.
Well, you never know. I mean, just saying. Anyway, we're kind of talking about leadership, and I have been saying really for a while, not that it makes it right or not, but I think how can I say this as politically correctly as possible? The skill set you need to be elected these days seems to be getting further and further away from the skill set you want somebody to have when they're in office. And I mean, the skill set you need to get there now appears to be, oh, I might even be getting to be, you know, some sort of minority woman status, but I won't go down that road. But it clearly is, you have to have been on TV for some other reason for like a real long time. You either got to be like, you know, somebody who's been a news person, somebody who's been known to be running a company, not just run a company, but you've got to be the face of a company. You can't just be a guy who runs, whatever, XYZ, does a spectacular job year after year. You have to make sure that you're always the guy that's on CNBC, you're always on Fox, you're always someplace. You have to become a personality in addition to just running the place. I mean, there's no doubt that people are that want the celebrity status has to be achieved somehow. Or you have to have been in office before, be old enough to, you know, Biden when he could start out, well, maybe he didn't have to do that, but, or you have to have been a politician, you have to be something. There's nothing to say that you manage something, that you, if you're in office, by the way, you have a couple of serious bills that have your name on them, okay, that you actually did something when you were there. There's nothing that says, oh, by the way, out of everybody in your class of the House of Representatives, you were considered by your peers to be the first guy on the committee for, like, the covert operations or something, the double secret committee, that you were the first guy of your class to be thought of by other people enough to... There's no such thing as a resume like anything like that that's published for any of these people. Is there, Kevin? Which is what I would like to...
Resume is important, and personality is important, but that's not it either. And you know, at some point or another, we are probably going to go back and say, you know, we really want someone who has a much calmer demeanor. Right now, we have a president who is all about creating chaos, and it's just what he does. I've had bosses like that. I hate it. But that is Trump all the way. I'm surprised that the Democrats didn't push harder to get someone who could counter that. But they didn't. You know, they kind of freaked out, thought Bernie was going to win, and so they just rallied everybody around Biden. And what's interesting about that is that he has now laid out an economic plan. Very largely, it's Bernie Sanders' economic plan. So you know, they were so afraid of it, and it's what they've embraced. But I'm veering off course on the leadership issue. The real point of it is that I don't know that Biden is that kind of a leader either. He's not the calm guy. He is the big personality guy too. And at some point, especially if Trump is reelected, I think the next time around is, you know, the country is going to be warming to the idea of someone who's much more low key. You don't have to have a big personality to be a really good leader, but you have to be able to articulate, your path or your image or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. You do have to be able to articulate that really, really well and then show some consistent pursuit of it. And that's, you know, I think that's, you know, that's more the style that we really need. That's the style we needed through this, you know, whole COVID-19 thing, is somebody who could very calmly but assuredly, you know, self-assured but also assure the nation that, you know, that we will navigate this. And we don't have that.
Well, you know, you know what I would do?
That's not Biden either.
No, you know, I think I said something like that by saying,
I think you did.
The skill set to get there, you're going to have to be a Mark Cuban. You're going to have to be an Oprah. You're going to have, because that's where Trump came from. I mean, I don't think that, Obama came up the ranks, but he had help from somewhere. I don't know if I buy the CIA plant, but he had help. Everybody ran against, somehow disappeared. That was interesting. And he's also very articulate. Good-looking guy, not a crook. I mean,
if you say clean, I'm going to come down there.
Well, I'm saying
that's what Biden, that was Biden's. Was that Biden or was that Harry Reid? Who was that that said that? I think it was Biden.
Well, what I'm saying is, if the family man, the whole bit. I mean, none of his. Daughters aren't out going crazy. I mean,
Let's put it this way: really appealing guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, out of all the guys we're talking about, he'd be the first guy I'd probably want to have a beer with or play golf with. I want no part of Trump. I'm not so sure Biden I would see eye to eye either. When you put him in these spots, it's, remember that the first or second Star Trek movie where Kirk jumps on the thing and Spock's the captain? It was a training flight, and all of a sudden they're heading into some mission, and then Kirk says to Spock, "How are these kids going to react?" And Spock looks at him, he says, "Each according to their talents. We'll find out." Right? And then when all of a sudden they go into battle, they had five people, or they had all these people that had left their post, and Scotty walks up with the one guy who's dead, or almost dead, all bloody, and he said he stayed his post to the end. I mean, you don't know. Right? Because you're not electing people from that kind of track record. You're electing people who somehow are popular on TV or say the right thing or whatever, and somehow say what you like or don't like the people you don't like, whatever it is, that's
sure,
what you're electing for.
That could be politicians. That could be career politicians, yeah, who happen to be, you know, who give good TV, so they get invited on it.
But, I mean, there are people, as much as I'm not a huge fan of Mike Quigley, I mean, he's a big friend of John Bridges. I've met the guy a few times. I mean, I don't, you know, it seems okay to me. But I also keep track, and from his class, I'm saying he's probably his third or fourth, maybe whatever term in the House. He's like the youngest guy on that double secret committee, which means to me that his peers have looked at him and said, this guy, A, can keep a secret, and B, has something to offer. Well, that means something, because I honestly believe, Kevin, in the midst of all the 435 bodies in the House, those guys know who the guys are that are willing to do the work and who you can put on a committee like that, or even want to be on it. I mean, I think there's people that turn out to be these committee chairmen, and I'm gonna say that the committee chairman does 100 times the work as just some schlump who's on a couple of committees at the ass end of the table. I mean, everybody knows the people who are willing to do that, except us, and because we don't ask the question or we don't care, right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. You know, some of the people, I won't make that the blanket statement, but yeah, I do think there are hardworking people that run committees. There are others that I think are just hacks, but you know, an example would be someone I would hardly ever agree with her in a million years, but it's Dianne Feinstein that runs is the chair of defense, or you know, one of those type of security committees.
She's the committee.
She's a Senate oversight woman. Yeah. She's a serious woman. But I wouldn't say the same thing about Nadler.
Yeah, well, I mean, when Teddy Kennedy died, it was John McCain was being interviewed on Face the Nation. I'm driving home from Audrey's, and they say, and he goes, "Well," he goes, "I lost one of my best friends." And he goes, "You didn't agree with him on anything." I said, "No, I never agreed with him on anything." he goes, when he was a committee chair, he was probably the best we've ever had. He said he always had the best people around him, and he was always the most prepared. And he says, but if you were on that committee and you disagreed with him, he let you not only have your say, if it made any sense whatsoever, which is what a lot of times it does, it made its way into the bill. You were able to make a difference even though you didn't disagree with him. And he goes, and then we go out for a beer and we fight afterward. But the point is, as somebody doing the job of a congressman, he did the job better than just about anybody, even though I never agree with him on anything. But I don't think the current people if you were to say something like that about somebody who was running for president, I would sit up and take notice because I was that guy at the CBO. I know how much work it is to actually accomplish something in that type of a system. Other people, maybe they've just never seen it. They don't know. They don't care. But I mean, the idea wherever you are, if all of a sudden, 10 guys show up or 20 guys show up at the park to play softball, there's always one guy. Or if it's basketball, said, "All right, here's how we'll pick up or does something," or called everybody to get there. There's always one or two people that take the lead in everything, right? And I'm just saying now, you're getting me. Lori Lightfoot could turn out to be the next Churchill and Roosevelt combined, but why would we expect that of her from where she's coming from? She's just a person who landed in there in a year where there are 10 people, and she got 90,000 votes, and all of a sudden she's mayor. Okay. It doesn't mean she won't be, it doesn't have amazing talent that is in there. I mean, or not. I'm just saying, as somebody looking for it in the past and said the next time there's a crisis, she's going to react the same way that there was a crisis in her business and look how well she did, or she was a lieutenant in the Army and look what happened when the place got attacked. Everybody else fell off their post and she didn't. But I mean, there's nothing like that in her background or Jay Pritzker or Trump that would lead you to believe that you're going to get a good outcome. Right?
Well, the other question to ask as you evaluate people is who's their team? What does
right.
the team look like, and how good are they at evaluating people, bringing on talented people, keeping them there, and people who complement them, not people who just parrot them. Not something we've seen out of Trump. It's too many positions have been revolving doors, and to a certain degree, that's politics. I don't know how many chiefs of staff, for instance, that President Obama went through, but there were quite a few. So some of it is just the world that they live in, but it's been more so, and it's been rancorous with Trump, with a couple of exceptions. Actually, there have been a few that have been around there for the duration and seem to be just fine,
or something,
and
or something.
or something. Well, for instance, why am I blanking on his name? The doctor who's in charge of HHS.
The African-American guy.
Yeah,
Carson?
He's the surgeon, the famous neurosurgeon.
Yeah, Ben Carson.
He's been
Ben Carson, yeah. Ben Carson is just a really solid individual, and he's low-key, and a really talented guy, and somehow or another he just manages to operate. You see him get interviewed on TV once in a while, but he seems to operate out of the limelight and do his thing and not piss everybody off, and somehow or another he's managed to fit in on that administration, and he's really not the typical person. But when you start looking at all of the other people, some of these other people around Trump who didn't necessarily have positions in his administration, but are just some of his longtime advisors, confidants, whatever you want to call it, they're a horrible lot. His attorney, all of these people. you know, that's got to be part of the calculus too. And when you start to evaluate these people, and again, I turn and look at Joe Biden, and it looks like everybody, you know, he's choosing isn't for ability; it's political calculus. You know, for vice president candidates, that short list is now down to it has to be a woman, or it has to be African American, or ideally it's African American woman. You know, that's not a qualification for vice president.
No.
There may be really good qualified candidates that fit that description, but that's, you know, if that's your primary qualification, that's not good thinking.
Well, some people are comfortable.
And, you know, with so I just kind of look at this, and, you know, again, I have the bumper magnet on the car that says Giant Meteor 2020, and I mean it. You know, we're so screwed, we might as well just end it.
Well, some people have the ability to, somehow it's strength of personality, it's something. They have amazingly powerful people around them that somehow they can control. It's you know, it's like The Godfather, basically. I mean, there's nothing different between government and the mafia. I mean, there were people around. I mean, would Luca Brasi, Tessio, and the other guy, Clemenza, ever have been working on the same team if it wasn't for the Don? Right? I mean, the guy that I hesitate to put him in the same class as a gangster, but one of the most impressive people I've ever met in the Chicago area was a gentleman named Jim Tyreek, and he was he ran Mesro, and we cleared there at the time, and I got to be, you know, pretty friendly with Jimmy. And I don't think I've ever come across, Kevin, a guy. I met some of the top people at Mesro, and I'm going to say I don't know if I really liked any one of them, yet they were very, very good in their spot, amazingly egotistical. And if Jimmy would have left for a month, we'd be left for good because he died. The place would disintegrate because these guys could never be in the same room together without Jimmy keeping them away from each other's throats. Because somehow or another,
he knew how to manage the ego.
But he also had
he was Bill Jackson.
Yeah, but he also had a serious ego on his own in the sense that I know where I want to go, and we're all going together, and you guys are coming with me. Well, the minute you're not with me, you know, who knows what's going to happen to you? But he had that amazingly laid back personality that still he was in control. You didn't mess with him. Because every place he went, he accomplished something. He was on the board of Marist High School, gave him a lot of dough, and he was the engine of Marist becoming co-ed. And since a lot of the areas that Marist had, my high school, had recruited from, became, you know, nobody lived there, or everything changed so much nobody wanted to go to Marist, the only way he figured they could save the place was have to go co-ed, and they did, and now they're probably, you know, they are so happy, they're so far ahead of other places in a lot of regards, and it's a super class institution, better than ever was. And I'm going to say, everywhere the guy went, he accomplished something. You know, and that's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to be in politics.
Yeah, there's always a vision. There's always, what are we doing? You know, what's the strategy? What are we doing? What are we trying to become? And then he gets the team to execute.
Well, the difference between Ronald Reagan and Bush the second, they both had very bright and very powerful people around them. I don't think they overran Reagan to the extent they did Bush too. They did overrun Reagan on that Iran-Contra. I think they went around him on that one. And I think that was a big deal, and it's something that's been buried in history pretty much. But they ran around him, but I don't really remember his reaction to that, but I can't imagine it was too cool, because I think Reagan was a pretty honest guy. And that was pretty awful, that Iran-Contra stuff. And he was pretty upfront with how he was dealing with Iran, and I don't think he liked the fact that some of his guys went around him. But we never really got that story, did we? But Bush, I think, got overrun by the powerful people. They just ran the place, which is different.
I think they did, and it possibly is a little like President Obama's time.
Yeah.
Because I think he got rolled early on legislatively by Pelosi and Reid, who did what they wanted to do, and which wasn't necessarily the president's agenda. He had a lot of agenda items early on that you know, when he had a filibuster-proof, veto-proof majority, and it didn't happen. Immigration was one of those. But I think his counterparts or his leaders in the legislature had other ideas. But by the second term, I think it was his agenda, and I think he was in charge. So some people grow into the job, too.
Well, I can't imagine that you run around at 15 inaugural balls, give a speech, then you land in that office, and you got to go, God, it's kind of lonely in here. I can't imagine that. I mean,
Bob says,
Chief. Well, and the one place where their leadership styles are different and that I actually do like about Trump is Trump talks to everybody.
Yeah.
Trump is on the phone, you know, all day, every day, talking to legislative people, talking to, I mean, he's got weekly calls with governors, he's got all this kind of crap. And President Obama is, you know, I think it was really his reaction to how the early years went on, just kind of closed ranks around him. And it was him and his advisors.
Well, he had Valerie Jarrett being his keeper.
And that was, Manny, you know, you got that to... was where who he met with.
Manny, you got a question?
A lot of people would say, yeah, we go months at a time without talking to him.
Maybe we got a question.
Yeah, well, Bob just writes in and says, Chief, find us a George Marshall. I don't think he's on TV.
That's right. And you're not going to find a Bill Stevenson on TV. I mean, that's the thing. But how do you find those people? And I mean, nobody accomplished more than Michael Bloomberg, but in today's world, he looked like a buffoon up there. Right? He lasted, what, one debate?
Yeah, that was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, but it's a totally different
skill
set.
A guy that accomplished something both publicly and privately, but it wasn't great on a debate stage and just got buried.
But look at these people giving speeches.
Well, right? He also was he had his own baggage too.
Yeah, he had
he did. No doubt about it. But I was very surprised to see him just go away as quickly as he did with all the money he had behind him and everything.
By the way,
kind of the I spent how many hundred million and all I have is this lousy T-shirt.
But he has to understand that turned people off. They want to see the guy before the money. And, and real quick, we got a dash here, Kevin.
Is he a guy? You know, is he just a regular person? Does he have that touch? See, you know, part of it is, I don't have time to talk about it. Remind me to talk about Shakespeare and...
we'll do that on Friday. Hey,
and leadership.
I didn't get a chance to answer the question yesterday. I'm going to do it real quick here. When Jeff asked me, what is the barrier to what Biden supposedly having a 10-point lead? And I have a one-word answer, Biden. If he gets out in front of everybody and acts like he had a stroke yesterday, like he, a couple times I've seen him, he still has to negotiate 3 months of this with him out in front of people acting like he has the energy and enthusiasm for the job. I think he could fall easy, from what I've seen.
And if he ducks out on debates, that won't be a good thing.
No. Kevin, thank you. Talk to you on Friday.
That will not go well.
SP Futures up 4. Let's talk about where his NCAA's going on Friday. Wow. There's stuff in California. I don't see the rest of the country playing if California's not playing, but we'll see. SP Futures up 44. NASDAQ is up 73. Right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Also have Mr. Russell Rhodes. The S&P futures up 43.75. The NASDAQ futures up 64. This is due, I'm going to say, in large part, although you never really know how much it is. Goldman Sachs, a blowout earnings. So Goldman Sachs is up 9.48, trading 223. So that's a 4.5% move. And we have Moderna up $12 because they came out with something positive news on a vaccine. I'm looking at their chart. See, back in May, they said they had a vaccine. The stock spiked to 90. But in 2 weeks, it was back down to 45. So that was a false alarm. And now we're back up to 80 on this one. And, Russell, how are you?
Doing okay. Is that like fool me once, fool me twice?
Can you tell that I'm
on the second one?
That I traded on a trading floor in open outcry system where everybody was very concerned about front-running and just and equitable principles of trade, and I'm the son of an Irish cop, that if I'm in the Oval Office this morning, first thing I'm doing is I'm calling the head of the SEC and said, get your ass out of bed. I want to know exactly who and when put this announcement out, and I want to know every trade that took place in the 20 minutes before.
Absolutely.
But I don't think anybody cares.
Do you go to FINRA first?
You know what? I'm going to the top because FINRA. Okay. Next thing I would do is disband FINRA in their current. The idea of having a for-profit regulatory place where you make your money by fining people is so un-American. I can't even go there.
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, can you find the big people or do you just chop up the little people? You know what is?
Isn't. In a roundabout way, isn't making money by fining people kind of like being the bully that takes people's school lunch money?
Or paying protection money to the mob.
Yeah. I like my bully example.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of the grade school bullies. I'm afraid of the other guys.
Yeah. What happened to regulation full disclosure? Is that in somebody's trash can somewhere, or does it get shredded?
It's still a thing, man, and if they are found to have let people know ahead of time, that's a complete violation.
Okay.
It's there. It's still there, and, but if, I think, I don't know the company at all, but I assume they're kind of a smaller place.
They don't have any products on the market. I don't think they have any products out there, do they, really?
Well, they're a public company. That's,
yeah.
Somebody gave them money for something. I bet you they just. I bet you anybody that's running their mouth at that place, that's resulting in, front running in the stock. I have a funny feeling they're either intentionally doing it, or, and this is what I always like to believe, they don't understand that they shouldn't share news that they're sharing.
Well, the last time, didn't they run out and sell extra shares the next day? While I was up there?
I think they run a secondary because they need a little bit more money to get this drug over the goal line.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
we're
going to be great, but first, you guys need to give me $100 million.
Yes.
And then the company, something like that.
You know, it's one of the things that, I mean, I want to run this by you, Professor, to think about, because I could be totally out in left field. I've had, Maddie hasn't even seen these because the guys have been calling me direct and so forth. A lot of feedback on the, when did we send that out, Maddie? The list of, I sent it out to all the Stocks and Jocks. Did you ever tweet that out, the list of all the people in Illinois that got the money?
I'm not sure if we did. I don't think we did tweet that out, but we can.
Yeah, I'll find it and tweet out. But the, it's.
Hold on. You'll find it and he'll tweet it out?
Maddie will. He's our tweeter.
Okay.
It's a list of everybody who...
Chief ain't tweeting nothing out. I'll say that right now.
I know.
And Russell, you know the reason for that.
Yeah.
Because if I tweeted it out, it's a big regulatory deal. So I just don't.
Okay.
So Maddie tweets for Stocks and Jocks. So if I tweeted it out, it'd be something that came out of PTI, which I don't want.
I understand.
So anyway, it's a list of all... people who got more than $150,000 in the PPP plan in Illinois.
Okay.
Right, and here's what I want to get to on this. I'll try and be brief. Too late already. People have been calling me, and what I've tried to explain to them, and not to disagree with them, all right, because I understand right where they're coming from. In fact, one guy called up and he says, "Why is the company that picks up the trash in my suburb getting $3 million? They never missed a paycheck. We've been paying the whole way." And I said, I can't explain it to you. What I can say is that this particular, by the way, there's 27,000 companies in Illinois that got over $150,000. Anybody under $150,000 is not listed on this sheet, but it's long enough just for that. There's 2,742 pages of 10 people on a page, Russell. That's a lot. Anyway, so, and that's only one state, right? And, oh, by the way, the total of all that money is only 1/6 of what these guys have sprinkled the infield with. Where'd the other 5/6 go, right? It's $500 million out of three plus trillion, right?
Yeah.
So what I've tried to explain, and again, this is not an excuse. This is just, I think you need to understand, I'm trying to understand it, even though I don't like it, that the Fed's goal is to just put money out there. They honestly don't care where it lands. They'd rather have it land in some small businesses than just land with the big guys like it always does. So to some extent, there's some little effort to get it to, I won't say every man, but certainly ma and pa, if they reach out and grab it, right? So I think to a certain extent, you need to grab it because everybody else is getting it, which is not something your mother would ever tell you, but if somebody's going to put $100 in every mailbox every morning, and you don't like the program, you must realize that the end of 6 months, the dollars are going to be worth a lot less. And the dumbest thing you could do is disconnect your mailbox because you need it just to keep even, right? Anyway, what I'm saying is if you contrast this with what Harry Truman did during the Second World War, I don't know how many people know this history, but Harry Truman was chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, right? I believe, and he was famous, or infamous, depending on what you like, of basically having meetings with the military under procurement projects, and George Marshall said that he was the fiercest guy when it came to every single dime of the taxpayers' money he felt he had an obligation to protect. And he said he was the roughest guy. If you only had two bidders on these bullets and you didn't have three, mm-hmm. It was a rough meeting because the captains and the colonels all hated him. And Marshall said, you know what? That's the way it's supposed to be in a democracy. It's other people's money. And now you contrast that with the Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan numbers of the last 2 days. Now, they both said that they made all this money trading because Wells Fargo doesn't do the same kind of trading. And they lost, $12 billion or some huge number. When I was 12, I should check it before I say it, but they lost money. I'm going to say, Russell, if you and I could dig through the numbers, how much money do you think these two bleep firms made in getting commissions and so forth from the Fed and all the stuff they're doing?
I thought all that was going over to BlackRock, but I'm sure that I'm sure that the ability to the trading that was created by some of the things that the Fed was doing was good for both of them.
But I mean, BlackRock's not a prime dealer; they're not a broker dealer, are they?
No, they're not. But I thought they were deploying the they were Fed money on their behalf.
They're consulting. They're doing the. What I'm saying, if somebody's going to go out and buy a bond, they're buying it through Goldman or through J.P. Morgan. Or they're not paying commission to BlackRock, I don't think. Right?
No, they're not.
So I'm saying, how much of this is commission in blatant front running what the Fred's doing?
I always thought that trading profits or losses were their proprietary trading.
Okay, what makes you think that they're not going to get this stuff first and turn around and sell it to the Fed?
I have a funny feeling that some of the things the Fed's doing. Are making it easy to be on the other side of trades. In fact, I know that I think Jamie Dimon said that we did good trading wise. Looking at the second half of the year, we think the environment's going to be that we make about half of what we've made trading wise for the second half of the year.
Who's the biggest trader in the black right now? The biggest gorilla is the Fed.
Yeah.
Well, but I'm saying, but
no, that's an anticipation that whatever opportunities they had are going to dissipate.
Well, the mentality, the argument,
Fed's not going to be doing as much. Hopefully, the Fed's not going to have to do as much because hopefully we'll all wear masks, and come September, we can all wear masks and hang out together.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, the mentality is so different, and I'm trying to connect this to my phone calls on the PPP. Is if you were to say to, maybe if you said to him, he'd react differently. But if you say to Chairman Powell, you guys paid Goldman Sachs, and again, don't take this because I'm just making up a number. You paid Goldman Sachs like $100 million of this crap for you. He's not Harry Truman that's going to say, well, that's outrageous. That's government money that belongs to the people. He's going to say, don't you get it? We're trying to shove as much money into the system as we can, and if we shove the $100 million at Goldman and commission, and it should have been 95, I don't care. I think that's where they're at, Russell, and I don't like it one bit. To be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I understand. No, I'm not. I'm not defending it that much. I'm just making sure we're clear.
Yeah, I mean, you start talking about helicopter money.
That's the vision that I'm trying to think of what's more extreme than helicopter. Maybe it's going, maybe it's just driving down the street, and the cool cannons that shoot the t-shirts out at sporting events that we don't need.
Yeah.
That aren't needed. So maybe the Fed has appropriated all those and they're shooting out bundles of cash.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, if your goal is to somehow find a home, for $3 trillion, so much so that you're willing to give it to somebody you've never met and send them a check. If that's your goal, you're not going to get 20 minutes of the guy's time to say that. By the way, Goldman Sachs overcharged your commissions. He's going to say, "So what?" That's the goal. But to me, that is so counter what we're all about, because we know someday, somewhere, that money's got to get paid for somehow, and. Do they think they're going to be back at their old job by then? It's somebody else's problem or what? I mean, who wants to be the guy who wins? Well, obviously everybody does because you control so much money of people. Who wants to be the guy that comes up on top in November where based on a CPI number yesterday, you're going to start seeing 1% CPI numbers. You're still going to have this problem where nobody wants to go back to work. You're still going to be hacking around vaccines because people aren't going to want to take them. I mean, whatever you're doing here, you're going to have a permanent underclass of people now been unemployed for a year, and you've got a deficit of how many bazillion dollars? I mean, what a spot to put somebody. I mean, Solomon would say, I don't want that job.
No, you can't disagree with that whatsoever.
But I do
want to say on the other side of all of everything, and I understand what you're saying, but I feel like one of the few things that has held up through all of this has been, you know, the financial system. And, you know, maybe they overdid it to make sure that it continued to run, but I sure would rather have them do that than have it underperform or start to show some nasty cracks while we were all staying, while all of us were staying home for 2 or 3 months there.
I'm going to bifurcate that a little bit. How's that for a term?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say,
go for it.
To make sure that
early in the morning, big phrase.
To make sure that the markets are running.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure that if Russell or the chief or Matty Weber or one of my clients has to sell a municipal bond, to make sure that the municipal bond market is up and going, so the guy can have an orderly sale at, let's say, a reasonable price. To make sure there's liquidity there, I'm all with you. It's not the same as saying, mm-hmm. we're going to drive these municipal bonds up to, you know, 1/10% of value. So, and we're going to maintain a price level. That's all, that is mm-hmm. stage two, which I don't get and I don't agree with.
And I think that sort of intervention where you have, I mean, we always refer to having kind of a put option on, you know, the economy or the financial markets or whatever, because we know the Fed will swoop in and help us. Something that ends up being that much of a line in the sand that everybody can focus in on, that messes up the financial markets.
And I think that's where they are.
It ends up, I'm trying to think of I'm picturing a spectrum. You know, if we were in the classroom, and we were appropriately distancing from each other, you know, I'd go up to the whiteboard and I would write, you know, pure, you know, trade what you want with no rules whatsoever versus manipulated markets on a spectrum, and I would put us a lot closer to manipulated markets than pure do whatever you want with inside information and everything else.
Well,
and that's not where we should be.
Well, to put it simpler, what I just long-windedly said, making sure the stock market is functioning is one thing. Making sure the futures stay over 3,000 is quite another.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. And that's not something that you know, they said. I remember. You know, I love reading about all of these guys, and I remember reading about Greenspan, and part of his daily routine is he would look at the stock market on the open, and he would look at it on the close. That was just, he just didn't really, you know, he just wanted to make sure nothing major had happened. I have a funny feeling that the guy in that spot now, is like a lot of us that are more interested in the markets and has it up in the corner of his screen all day long.
Well,
and that's not what you want.
We were talking earlier with Kevin about, leadership and background and how when you elect people with basically no resume other than they're popular, which seems to be getting more and more. Without having something that they've done in the past, as they used to say, do something worth writing about or write something worth reading about. None of these guys do any of that now, right? I mean, it seems to me some do some. I mean, obviously, but
I think the last one that I actually did was probably the first George Bush.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, Clinton did a lot of great things, but he also was, you know, a governor of a state that's smaller than 3 zip codes in Chicago.
Yeah, and he was a,
you know,
he was a governor of a place that I think his first term in office, and I could be wrong on this, I think he made like $15,000, $20,000was what the governor made.
Yeah, he didn't have a pot to piss in when he got to the White House.
So,
really did.
So what ended up happening, his wife ended up being the benefactor of the largesse, because, you know, government can swing an awful lot of contracts. I mean, you're in a position to swing massive amounts of money to any individual firm or person. So that's where his wife fell into the Whitewater Project, and she ended up with the brokerage firm that put the winners in her accounts and the losers in somebody else's, and that's how they got the money to them. That's why I thought she was a big crook, you know. But I also know that if you're in that, well, it's really hard. Just like when the guys were representatives in Chicago years ago, you know, when I got out of college, these guys are making, I'm thinking 25, 30 grand, and they have two houses.
Yeah.
I mean, and you couldn't trade your own stuff like they seem to be able to now. But anyway,
I think you're exactly right. I mean, basically the presidency is a popularity contest. Which one do you like more, or which one do you, I think the last election for a lot of people was which one do I dislike less? We should be looking at it as a freaking job interview, and who do you want to run something that may or may not have a big impact on your life? Hopefully it doesn't have a big impact on your life. I've been so upset over something I want to talk in the second hour that the current guy's definitely lost me. But yeah, I was explaining to my kid who's very interested in politics that my feeling is that government's job is to make sure we're safe, make sure we have all of our essential services, and then kind of stay out of my way and let me within reason try to live the best life that I can. And I think some of the things that have happened recently are getting in the way of that.
But beyond that, you
should think of electing somebody as being a job interview, and you should listen to them. And you might really—I mean, there are people that I've interviewed for jobs that have been just a great conversation. But am I willing to go on? You know, am I willing to leave my trading book with them and go out of the country for a week? God, no. You know.
Well, that's right.
I totally agree with you that. The method of selection, or just how people end up voting, just they like somebody or not like somebody.
Well, I get all the
that's just not the way to go.
I get all
this
stuff.
Really not the logical way to go.
I get all this stuff from the right, that are concerned about the deep state and all this other stuff. And as much as I fight back at some of the lunacy there, there's some truth to that. Russell, I think there's truth on both sides of all this stuff. I mean, when you look at the people who put, first of all, you ask yourself. I mean, if you're, I'm going to say this with tongue in cheek and kind of with laughter. You gotta be the dumb dumb, and hopefully I was never, who thinks that walking down the block and choosing between two people that other people have chosen for you to choose between. Is democracy at any kind of level? I mean, you're out of your mind. I mean, the thing that happened with Trump, the fact that it happened, to me, is one of the most spectacularly positive things that's ever happened in my political lifetime. The only problem was, it happened to be him, and he blew it. The idea of somebody coming from the outside, overrunning a party, blowing through, making all the other guys look like morons, which a few of them were, and all of a sudden landing the job. I was so happy that it, quote, happened. I was so unhappy that it was, quote, him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I honestly do think that if you go back to the Bush-Gore thing, and there was a guy, I mean, I think he might have died during whatever, anyway, but he was a guy, remember the guy who wrote The Making of the President in 1960, and then every year there was 64, 68, blah, blah, blah. The deal they had was it Theodore White? Is that the guy's name?
I don't know.
The deal was they could embed a news guy all the way through the campaign.
It was Theodore White.
He's pretty good, chief. He's basically in the can with you. That was the deal you made. Okay. But then he couldn't say a word until the thing was over. And then the last one they did, I believe, was the Bush-Gore thing. And because the election was, quote, over, he published them. I think it had to be 30 pages long. I still have it at home somewhere buried. It's a Time or a Newsweek. And the way these people are selected, they basically, the big shot Republicans, who was the guy who was Reagan's Secretary of State and Secretary of Treasury? Was it Schultz?
Yeah, Schultz.
Brilliant.
Or we're both wrong, but that's the name that popped in my mind.
I think it was Schultz. So he ends up, he's one of these big shot Republicans, and not that there's big shot other guys. He has essentially at his ranch in Texas or someplace has an interview process for who's going to be the next president. And those guys interviewed and they dragged up Bush. They said, okay, well, the guy's got this baseball thing going for him, so everybody likes him for that. He's the son of a fairly popular president. Okay, nobody disliked George Bush one personally, I don't think. I sure didn't.
No.
And And he's got this problem that he was basically a bleep up when he was younger, and weasel his way out of being in the Vietnam, but that's okay. He was sort of in the guard, even though he really knew much in the guard. And if we can just decide we're not talking about anything before the age 40, because now he doesn't do drugs and he doesn't drink, but before then we don't want any part of that. We'll just put the line in the sand and we'll say we're not talking about stuff before age 40. And then they got away with it. So they essentially, he's our man. He's clean. He had won the governor of Texas a couple times, so he knew how to campaign. He didn't piss anybody off, and he's a genuinely nice guy, right?
I mean, yeah.
So they run him. And they run him against McCain, and McCain ends up kicking his ass in Iowa. Now, these guys, the guys at this table, the 12 people or 10 or what, they raised $30 million for the campaign out of the gate. And $30 million in whatever year that was like a real lot of money. I mean, now not so much. Mm-hmm. But then he loses to McCain, I think, in Iowa and in New Hampshire, didn't he? And they are seriously pissed off.
No.
So down they go to Super Tuesday. All of a sudden, the internet had just become the internet. All over down there, there's all these stories about his wife cheating on him when he was a POW, and the reason why he got out is he actually gave the North Vietnamese what they wanted. All this stuff starts hitting the press in Carolina. And sure enough, because these guys are afraid now, they've pissed the waiter $30 million. So Bush wins handily down there and never looks back. And that's the reason why at the convention, McCain refused to shake his hand, basically. And they ended up, sort of patching it up somewhere along the way, I guess, as politicians do. But he was essentially interviewed for that job. And Gore, on the other side, his father was very powerful. He comes up through the ranks, and he ends up, and your parties want no part of a Bobby Kennedy deal where they don't seem to have a guy or a bunch of stiffs, and all of a sudden somebody jams into the last three or four state primaries, wins, and now it's a brokered convention. So ever since the Bobby Kennedy fiasco, he was shot too, but the they wanted no part of that. So now the object is for the person to be somewhat anointed, and he has to go through the process of basically performing oral sex, and all the people have the initial money. The initial money is what's key. So then immediately they start telling you and me the dumb rank and file. Well, Joe has managed to amass $100 million, where Jane or Jim has only got $10 million. He must be better. Because right away you get that message, right? It's who's amassed more money, because they're going from these little meetings that people are setting up, and all of a sudden they come up with the front runner and the money. Now, the people who give them the money aren't giving it to them because they're going to lose. So when you go to Iowa, it's a trumped-up deal. Who gives a rat's behind? Whether people sitting in a gymnasium, you're supposed to win that one if you got the most dough. Then the same thing in New Hampshire, and then all the other guys are supposed to fade. And that's the way it is. There's two people that are anointed. And then you and I, thinking we're in a democratic society, go down the block to vote between those two people. And if you're a cynic, some mornings I am, you'll say, what's the difference between the U.S. and Russia? One party. Right? And try and be a third party and get on the ballots in these states. You're a better man than me.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
I know it's a nightmare. So
why are we shocked, when we get this?
But don't you think that there's some people that are coming close or have gotten in there that are outside of this? Do you think maybe Obama was actually, unseated, Hillary Clinton in that process? And do you think that, Bernie Sanders caused enough of a dent against Hillary Clinton in that process? And don't you think that, she went through that a few times and they're like, look, we're just, we've got to use somebody else here. And that's how we ended up with Biden instead of all these other upstart people.
But he also had money behind him.
But I wonder if Obama, just going through the I was ticking backwards, and I just wonder if, Obama was the first one to actually break from all of that.
There are people who think that he was let in by the CIA, that he was the ultimate insider.
Oh, yeah. Valerie Jarrett, CIA, I know that.
But Obama didn't come in with anything like, I'm going to tear down Boeing and the people who charge too much for defenses.
He was going to make everything better, but he never laid down anything that was going to really rock the boat, and especially rock the boat on the business end of things.
And Biden's the same way. He's amazingly safe. for Wall Street. He's safe for, I mean, as Dr. J used to say, you know, Minjan's, you know, more conservative. And he says, I'll take another eight. If you have, I can vote for Obama again, I'd do it. He's been the biggest boon. He's been the biggest boon to big business and rich people ever. I mean, he was safe. S&P futures up 46, NASDAQ futures up 74. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Russell Rhodes. It's from Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have S&P futures up 46.50. NASDAQ futures up 72. So the NASDAQ was roughly about, on Monday, they were up 200 and some points. Finished down 200 and some points. And now, yesterday, we finished up, thinking like 90, and now we're up 72. So we're kind of almost right back to where we were on Monday at the midpoint of the day. This is crazy stuff based on, well, today it's Goldman earnings and Moderna with the yet another vaccine. The second time for those guys where we've got a big spike. We'll see if this time it's for real, but you know, we won't know just yet. Dow is up, there's over 500 points on the Dow. We also have, like I say, Goldman Sachs is up 961. It's up 4.5%. And Moderna is up, 1255. 87.54, almost as high as it was on the last time they said a virus, and the last time they didn't. Let's hope they do this time, obviously. Over in Europe, DAX up 223, 1.6%. FTSE up 121, 2%. CAC around up 122, 2.4%. Asia now, it's a totally different story. Again, yesterday, at the end of the day, Trump came out and said that he was going to start treating Hong Kong sort of like China, when same as China, not any different. I don't know how the hell that's actually going to work, because I think Hong Kong, we'll get Russell here in a second, but I think they trade in dollars, and there's massive amounts of stuff going on in their stock exchanges that obviously is not China, because you can trade in that market, you can't trade in the other one. So to say that we're going to do this all the same is really bizarre. Nikkei up 358, obviously away from this stuff, that's 1.6%. Shanghai down 53, 1.6%. The Hang Seng unchanged, so that's kind of an interesting buffet there. 10-year yield 0.66%. Bund minus 0.43%. And Japan positive 0.02%. Oil with a nice rally this morning as well, up 60 cents, up I'm going to say way over 40 at 40.89. It was under 40 the other day. Brent 43.39. Natural gas 174. That's unchanged. Arbob up 2 cents to 126. Gold, which has been strong, actually down five this morning to 1808, still above 1800. Silver up 15 cents, 1968. Wow. Copper 293, still trying to get to $3. We'll see if it does. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Coming up on 39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still pretty quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No accidents to speak of in the entire area, so that's good news. No stalls or immediate slowdowns except for the construction that's been affecting the inbound Stevenson all morning. It's down to one lane as you merge onto the Dan Ryan, and that's a project that's going to last until mid-September, it's being reported. So avoid the Stevenson if at all possible, because there are delays as you approach the Dan Ryan. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds early, some rain in the forecast later. We'll reach a high of 86. Right now it's overcast and 77 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 111 today. Right now it's clear and 89. Chief.
What's your over-under? If after the show we got in the truck and we drove over there and counted how many people are working on this project instantly so they get done as fast as possible.
Over-under on people?
Working on it.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know how big this project is, but I would set it at 10.
I'm going to say zero.
The over-under is zero?
I'm going to say that...
How do you go under zero?
They won't even touch it.
You take the other side of that bet immediately.
Yeah, yeah. You at least have to go 0.5 so I can take
somebody
the under.
You got to do two in case there's just one guy standing around with a cell phone with a vest on.
How many times have you seen like a bridge be closed here and they don't start construction for like 3 weeks after they closed it?
Definitely seen it.
I mean, and when you say, why did you have to do it? I'll bet there's two guys underneath looking at it. Might, you know, that type of thing.
Then my overwork.
They're
inspecting it. They're doing something to it.
Yeah.
Russell, what? Here's a good one. EU court says this one pays to be big, buddy. EU court says Apple doesn't have to pay nearly $15 billion in Irish taxes.
Really?
Now, how could they?
Are they going to have to? Are they going to have to pay it somewhere else?
No,
because they've been trying to keep their. And Ireland got, there's a lot of moving parts to that one.
Yes.
You just gave me a headline. They basically moved a bunch of stuff to Ireland and moved all their European operations to Ireland so that they could, because Ireland offered them a really nice tax deal. And then I think the EU was trying to force them to pay more taxes, saying, oh, it's unfair. They need to pay some more taxes to you guys so we can collect some more taxes. So I don't know if it's something that Ireland really wanted to do or not.
Well, the object was...
That's a much deeper story than... and it might not be a case of Ireland trying to avoid... Or, I'm sorry, of Apple trying to... See, I just referred to Apple as a country as well.
They're way bigger than Ireland.
They're way bigger than a lot of countries.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness... That's a very roundabout situation. It's something that I use as an example of setting up business in a more favorable tax environment.
All right, so we've been talking about politicians.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't make your biggest people, the big companies, pay the taxes that other people pay, and you give them money essentially for free when other people are paying like 20% or 25 or 30. And yet you have your lips like diarrhea of the mouth talking all day long about helping the small guy. Can you even begin to help the small guy when you give the big guy those two advantages?
No, because you got to make the money up somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, we did that. Let's turn it on ourselves. We did that in Illinois. Remember they raised the corporate taxes or raised some taxes, and some companies started threatening to move, including, the CME Group. And they started giving so many exemptions that the net dollar amount that they were going to get from the tax raise was even.
Yeah.
But the people that could twist the governor's arm at the time ended up not being the ones that, they're the ones that ended up not paying more. The underdogs got to pay more, and the net result for the Illinois state government was we're not taking in any more money than we were before. We've just pissed off some really large companies.
Do you think in a totalitarian regime, you know, do you think Caesar ever even dreamed of being able to pick and choose on who he taxed and who he didn't?
Oh, I think he totally got to pick and choose on what he was doing.
Didn't say whether he had the power to.
Now, don't you think that? The way that the Romans did, you're getting me on another different direction here. The way the Romans did the taxes was they had one tax collector guy that they said, here's how much your area needs to contribute to the government. Now you go figure out how to get it. And you totally, I've always thought, that's one where you want to be that guy's brother-in-law.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because the tax collectors had so much discretion that they could get away with things like that.
Well, if you
I want to bring up a different topic.
Go ahead.
I meant to
gears. Page two.
Something before the break, but we were going late.
Page two.
I want to talk. I mentioned the my attitude about government is just staying the heck out of my way, and a little bit something more important to me than most people and buried in some of the other stuff that was going on yesterday. They reversed the decision to take away people's student visas that they were taking on online classes yesterday.
Okay.
That actually got reversed. And the amount of work that was created for me and everybody else at universities across the country to try to quickly adjust so we would have some in-person classes, just to have this thing reversed. That is a case of, you know, that is probably the biggest case, and I know it sounds petty in the whole world scheme of things, but that's really a case of the government just getting in the way and causing trouble for people. And the guy in the White House completely lost me on that one. He just about lost me, but he totally lost me on that one. I'm totally voting for Kanye now. and I am.
So, what about the libertarian guy? Whoever he is.
Maybe I'll vote for the libertarian guy. I wanted the guy from Starbucks to run.
What happened to
Schultz?
Him?
And he got the crap beaten out of him almost immediately. And you can't tell me that wasn't a coordinated effort.
Oh, got you.
Okay, everybody said you're just guaranteeing that Trump's going to get elected. I don't know if that would have been necessarily true.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think it would be true with Biden running against Trump. Maybe they knew Biden would be the president running against Trump that early on. But I didn't think that was necessarily true. I think he would have taken from both sides.
Well, I mean, I think Trump's handling, I think his instincts, okay, and where things are going on the virus, mm-hmm. are absolutely 100% true. Something's wrong here. We got to get things rolling. There doesn't seem to be you'll hear somebody hysterically say, oh God, 10,000 people more, you know, were tested positive yesterday. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now the follow-up question might be, are they sick? Well, not really, or a couple of them maybe are, but the rest of them aren't. All right, so in 2 weeks, they're not going to have the virus. Right, well, yeah, they're not going to have it in 2 weeks. Now, are those people not going to work? Those people not going to teach? Those people not going to go to school? For at least a while, you know, the debate is whether it's 2-3 years or whatever, they're not any danger to anybody else. Pretty soon, we're going to have like 20 million people like that in this country that can't work, have to wear a mask, can't go to school. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, there doesn't seem to be any common sense. You know, if we have 60,000 people test positive this week, that's way too many, I guess. But I also know that 60,000 people 2 weeks from now we don't have to worry about, right?
Yeah.
They're moved over into the other side. So the idea of having 250,000 people, however many people are coming over here from overseas on a visa, where they're going to stay at home in their apartment and not even go near to school, that makes very little sense to me, really. I mean, what are we doing that for? And are we going to pay? Are we going to charge these people $70,000 to come live in somebody's apartment and watch TV? I mean,
I know the government of Israel put everybody up for 2 weeks if you came back from a different country. probably a little bit different situation, but
they did that. Ours had nothing to do with that. Ours was, it was Trump's way to force these places to open.
Yeah. You know, I know. That's what he did to us, and that's what I think he was trying to do to us with this this ICE, deal, which you got to figure when he told the people at ICE they were going to have to, we're going to do this, that he knew it was going to get reversed, or at least the people at ICE are like, all right, we'll do this, but, all of them are grumbling to themselves, yeah, but this is definitely going to get reversed, and it did get reversed by the court, because it was just a little too much mind.
He's smart enough to know, and he does have some instincts. I mean, you got to give him that.
Mm-hmm.
He's smart enough to know that if California doesn't open up any of their schools, the incredible weight on that state of all those people, are they really going to be able? Because the same people, this is the part that I would have a problem with, being from the South Side. The same people, Jay Pritzker, I'll use him as an example because he's more close to the people listening to the show. Probably he can't stand Trump. Okay, it's fine. I get that.
Kind of obvious.
Okay, I get that. but he's demanding. We're paying people this. We're doing that. By the way, we run the state so crappy that we're so much in hock that we need all this. Anyway, he's bitching about Trump a blue streak. The next day, he calls the guy and says, oh, by the way, our next week's unemployment checks are going to bounce unless you send me a check. You can't have it both ways, bud. Right? I mean, California...
You can't bitch and whine about the guy and then turn around and say, okay, help me out.
Yeah, well, I mean, California, they can't stand the Trump presidency, the state unilaterally. Yet without money, where are those guys going to be paying all these salaries
It's not Trump's money. It's our money. Who cares?
What I'm saying is...
Why are you acting like it's Trump's money and his decision? It's our money.
I'm saying it's not the way you... Why does a federal government going to help out a state at all that decides to pay
It's our money.
I know, but I don't want my money going there, do you?
I want it coming here.
Why?
Your first example is Pritzker.
Okay. They're going to close the schools.
It's not Trump's money.
Right, they're going to close the schools and they're going to elect to pay people that aren't working. By the way,
I don't want that either, but that's not what you said. You said you shouldn't be mean to Trump when you're asking him for money. It's not his money, it's our money.
You shouldn't badmouth the guy. I'm gonna mediate here. You shouldn't badmouth the guy and then turn right around in public and then go, hey, I need to work with you on this right here.
There's no law that says...
I don't disagree.
I think that's where we're... It's not the money part. It's more of the, and Trump's not a congenial guy. But it's
the part that
the guy
you got Trump
the guy, and then and then turning around and saying, "Okay, I need your help with this, this, and this."
You got Trump slamming Pritzker and
Lori.
And then you got Lori and Pritzker slamming him. I get that they don't like each other. It doesn't matter. Right. It's our money, and they got to work together to make sure that we're taking care of.
What I'm saying, and the part that I guess I left out, is the money they're asking for. It's not like there's a law that was passed by Congress, signed by a president, him or Obama or whoever the hell else it was, that says Illinois gets this piece. You're right, Matty. You should not have to be nice to the guy to get that money.
Right.
That's yours. But these loans that states are getting because they're broke, there's no law for that. That's an appeal to the administration. That's different. That's what I'm saying. I shouldn't have to appeal to you for your rent, right?
No, I agree with you, and there's all kinds of issues, but my point is that he's an asshole to them, they're an asshole right back to him, and that is what it is, but the fact is that it's a federal government and a state government that have to work together for the people, so it's like, get over it.
Well, how can I say that in my world, I want your rent whether you like me or you don't, okay, because you're living in a place and that's our deal. It's not the same as me saying you're a blithering idiot. By the way, I don't like your dog or your wife. The next day going up and saying, by the way, I need $100. I mean, because this money that these states that are broke that are appealing for, there's no law on that, Matty. They could just say, you guys are broke, you're broke. There's no.
Yeah, they're supposed to be fiscally taking care of themselves through the tax revenues that they bring in.
Right. The other stuff is largesse.
We're in complete agreement there, but I think what we're talking about is 45 million people that lost their jobs across the country, and unemployment checks will bounce.
Okay, except for the fact...
Because no one is prepared for that.
Illinois was in deep trouble long before this happened.
no question, as are many other states.
Right.
They didn't have the money set aside to chip in their part for the bachelor party.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Well, but still wanted to go and party.
And you know, it's like the guy that wants to go along to the Vegas bachelor party, and everybody's got to put up, you know, $500 each to cover the room and the groom stuff and everything else. And you got one deadbeat friend that can't put it in. And you hear that he's been bad-mouthing you to his girlfriend, and then the next day he goes, you know, I want to come along, but I can't put up my $500. Can each of you guys help cover me here?
Gee, do we know anybody
how's
like that?
How's that for taking it to a different level?
Manny and I both got the same name on the tip of our tongue that we're not about to.
I got a few
names.
Oh,
is that funny? I think everybody in the world right now knows who I'm, you know, when I say knows who I'm talking about, they have their own version of that. Right. I got my own version of that, too.
Yep.
But these decisions I guess we're going. We're all agreeing. These decisions are now really big dough, and every time
I just don't like the idea that Trump gets to make decisions about my money, and I'm saying the royal my money, like our money. I don't like that.
Yeah,
idea. That's ridiculous.
Well, we shouldn't be in this mess, Matty.
And actually, in reality, Trump doesn't. Congress is supposed to.
Right, and that's why I said Chief's argument makes no sense.
I think the Treasury and the Fed have a lot of latitude to give out loans of these people.
Oh, yeah.
No, I to be honest with you, Manny, I don't know.
The latitude that they've been given, I think the first time they ever did it was back in 2008 with Paulson. But they're given that authority through action of through Congress's voting.
Actually, Manny, this would
Bob
be...
Bob writes in and says, by the way, Illinois sends way more money to Washington than we get back.
Yeah, I had a funny feeling. I didn't know the number off the top of my head, but I had a funny feeling that net out right now, and I think this shifts from time to time, because I remember hearing the numbers out of New York State, where New York State sent a lot more money to the federal government than they got back.
Oh, way more. Cuomo.
Yeah, Illinois sends way more than we get back, and it's our money.
And I have a funny feeling we're a state like that as well.
Don't take the leap that it's our money.
Well, I'm not saying it's ours as in Illinois. I'm saying it's taxpayer money. It's not Trump's
money.
And Illinois pays more than we get back anyway.
All right, so, okay, but now let's... If Manny Weber was Jimmy Olsen Cub reporter, you've got me very curious now, because when all of a sudden a state, because of the virus or whatever, basically says, hey, we can't pay our unemployment checks, what form is that money, Russell? Is it a loan from Treasury? Is it a loan from the Fed? Is it not a loan at all? Is it a grant? Does it have to be passed on a special deal through Congress? I have no idea. I'm thinking it's a loan, but from someplace. But when does it have to be paid back? What are the terms? I have no idea. Does anybody?
I have no idea.
By the way, Bob...
What they probably should do is issue, you know, some sort of municipal bonds for it and just have the Fed buy them.
I have a feeling that's going
on. And that turns into a loan.
I think that...
De facto.
I have a feeling that's what's going on. But you know what, Bob? Mm-hmm. Talk about giving assignments out. I read one time, there's all kinds of studies based how many states, what they give the government, what, you know, to Washington versus what they get back. There was one I read, Bob, I'll speak to you directly. It was so good, and now, like a blithering idiot, I can't find it.
I remember talking about it on the show.
Now I can't find it. Mm-hmm. Russell, it had to do with not just the tax money, which is easy, but is also misleading. It had to do with how many people in the state were employed, what percentage of the state were employed by the federal government. And then it had to do with, was the other one, what about pensioners there, too many, or something? But there was federal employees, it was tax dollars, and it was something. There were three legs to the stool, and I can't remember the third one. That's one of the reasons I'm so pissed off on the article. But it's really mind-boggling. I mean, and it, matter of fact, Connecticut wasn't horrible, but if they ever closed the General Electric submarine plant in Groton, it would just flip the other way dramatically. But New Mexico is so far ahead of everybody. It's some amazing number. It's like, was it over 10% of the state works for the government? Or some number. In Illinois, it's like one-tenth of one. I mean, there's no government jobs here. There's no bases. There's one base. But in some of these places, there's all kinds of stuff. Alabama, I think, is, you know, some... Because, I mean, those people are never going to get laid off. right? I mean, it's not just the taxes. It's other kind of money that's pumped into the place. And anyway, if I could find that article, I'd act like I was coherent. Anyway, Russell, thank you very much. SP Futures up 46. Are you guys starting, or what are you doing?
We're starting mostly online.
Okay, but on time.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely starting on time.
Oh, good for you. All right, take care, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. Happy market today, everybody. We'll see if this turns. Doesn't look like it's going to. Talk tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.